and welcome to IT Time, TechNet Radio. I'm your host, Blaine Barton, Senior Technical Evangelist at Microsoft. It doesn't matter where you're at, Paris, Rome, London, around the world, we bring you IT Time. And I've got a special guest today, Buck Woody. Buck, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm always doing great, but I'm doing great. I live in paradise. I have a killer job. I'm doing great.
Yeah, so, I mean, speaking of a killer job, yeah. I mean, so you work in this machine learning and data science.
Yes.
But, you know, what does that mean, right?
Yeah, so this has become the new hot thing, right? Data science. And we've got a group at Microsoft. In fact, we have one of the largest groups of data scientists in any tech company on the planet. So we're pretty proud of that. They're scattered all over the world, really bright folks. And then, of course, me as well in that team. And just a great time to be in this area. It's just super hot. The machine learning and the data science area, just amazingly hot.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, dude, the actual data scientists, they actually do calculative and quantitative analysis on the other data scientists?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. Do we do work looking at other people who do the work? Actually, I did do some numbers around what data scientists do every day. One of the disadvantages of studying numbers and metrics is that you tend to self-study and self-metric. I'm doing a session. I think it's a couple of places, but I'm doing one called A Day in the Life of the Data Scientist to talk a little bit more about what a data scientist actually does.
Awesome. Yeah, and you've got some great articles and some learnings on your blog as well. So, you know, we talk about just, you know, what is a data scientist?
Okay. Yeah, there's a whole bunch
of buzzword. Is that just a buzzword out there, or is there?
Yeah, it's a great question. Sometimes it is, like everything else. I don't know if you remember back in the 80s. Were you around in the 80s? Or are you that old?
No. Yeah, I was around in the 80s. Yeah, I was just actually getting right out of college. So.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Well, I was already working, and I was working at NASA at the time, and. When BI, business intelligence, came out, that was the big new thing. And IBM, I remember going to a conference. And I also remember Microsoft later talking about putting BI in a box so that anybody could do it. And the same kind of comments that I heard about data science, I heard about BI then. Is it real? Is this something people will actually do? You'll never get it in a box. You need a whole team, 18 months for a project, that sort of thing. Yeah, data science is a real thing. It's actually a title that you can get, and it's fairly well recognized. And there are programs now at most every college, including where I teach at the University of Washington, to become a data scientist. And the way I describe it, and probably incorrectly, and the data scientists will cringe a little bit when they hear this, but I think a data scientist is either a statistician who knows too much about programming or a programmer that knows too much about statistics. Add in there the domain knowledge, and by domain I mean like business knowledge or science knowledge or whatever, or maybe all of the above. When you stir all that together, you end up with someone like that. Someone like a Nate Silver comes to mind. Do you know him, by the way? Have you ever heard of this guy?
I've heard of him, yes.
Yeah. He's the guy that I think it was in 2008, he predicted like 49 or 48 out of the state's elections perfectly. He like predicted those. And then in 2012, he predicted all 50 states and the District of Columbia perfectly. He came up with this program that he sold to baseball, PECODA. Is the name of the program, but it's this algorithm he uses that can predict how well a baseball player will do or a sports player will do based on various things. So when you think about folks like him, he wrote a book called The Signal and the Noise. And in fact, he's going to be at the Microsoft Data Insights Conference in Bellevue next month. Next month will have passed by now, but back in March then. He's going to be speaking there, and I'm going to be actually speaking with him at that conference anyway. And he wrote this book called The Signal and the Noise. And I think if you look at that, you get a general idea of what a data scientist can do. It's a bit more than BI and a little different. It doesn't replace BI in any way. It looks for an answer rather than exploration like you might do in business intelligence. When I think of BI, I think about getting a group of data and being able to explore it and saying, that's interesting. Why is that true? And then exploring it further. Whereas in data science, you often know the question you want answered. And these are big, deep, difficult questions. And you sort of hit the nail on the head there, which is this predictive stuff or is it categorizing things? And it's both. And that's where the techniques inside machine learning are also used in data science, along with a lot of other techniques to deal with data sizes that are super huge.
Yeah, that's simply fascinating. Hold on one sec here. Who is Buck Woody? Oh, look at that. So I was just pinging Cortana. So she found you. You came up to the top of the list for Buck Woody. It's very unusual.
Interesting. You know what's interesting is that Cortana, behind the scenes there, is actually using a lot of the Azure ML machine learning. It's a service we have inside Azure. It's actually using a lot of that information, or rather algorithms, to come up with the right information. So it is contextual. And it may have considered that you work at Microsoft. It may have even considered that we're talking. So it can go that deep, and we're not talking about a simple search algorithm. We're talking about very complicated conceptual and what we call cognitive at times computing, that can consider a lot of variables at one time.
So when you talk about all these interconnected variables, and of course Azure, right, in the Azure platform, can you go into kind of the components of how you would build an application using, machine learning, data science, and Cortana Analytics?
Yeah. So first of all, it probably makes sense to talk a little bit about Cortana Analytics, because Cortana Analytics is not a product. It's actually a suite of products. There's about 13 in the mix right now, depending on how you count. And it goes everything from Azure itself, the platform, all the way up through Power BI so that you can look at it. And we think about things like the Azure Data Catalog, where you can describe the data very well. And then we think about things like Azure Data Factory, bringing the data through. And we think about HD Insight, which is Hadoop. And then obviously Azure ML, which is machine learning. And then we come out all the way to Power BI to look at the data, or Cortana, like you just did, just ask a question. So for instance, when you think about how something would be put together in this way, you might come up with a question of, do we know who our customer churn is? When a customer leaves, it's super expensive. Do we have a way of finding out who might leave our company? In BI, we would come up with solutions around exploring our customer data. But inside data science, the data scientist should probably push back and say, what do you mean by that? I mean, what are you going to do with it once you find out? And so in Cortana Analytics, we say that it's a suite of products that will allow you to predict outcomes, to prescribe actions, and to do prescriptive things based on those actions. So for instance, do we have customer churn? The data scientist will say, well, what are you going to do when you find that out? Well, I want my salespeople to list them. And what will they do when they do that? Well, I might go visit those customers to see if we can win them back. So in essence, what you're really looking for is which customers should which salesperson visit. That's the real question in this case. And so inside Cortana Analytics, you could simply hold up your Windows phone or your Cortana-enabled device and say, which customers should my salespeople visit based on customer churn? And it will figure out all of the rest if you build it this way and come back with that list. And in fact, you could even ask it what would be the cheapest flights to take to visit them in the right order. That's literally the power that you can build inside these things. So it's a suite of products that includes a lot of stuff. You can just go to CortanaAnalytics.com and you can see a whole lot more about what those parts are.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know what, I think I told you this earlier today in today's meeting that around I was going to be heading out for a week at NASCAR.
So
how can we use, is it Cortana or Cortana?
Right? I mean, well, you...
Are we using these analytics? Are we using the analytics to say, hey, you know, I can prescribe a solution through Azure to tell me, is the winner going to be, you know, car number three, car number five? Yeah. How could this be used in NASCAR? And more importantly, if we talk about, you know, what's going on hot this month is March Madness. So, like, talk us through the NASCAR piece first and how you would use this.
Yeah, so thinking specifically about NASCAR and then its cousin F1, right? The Formula Racing,
sure,
super huge around the world. But when we think about those, it's very interesting. GM was trying out a new Chevrolet model, and NASCAR used sentiment analysis, which evaluates spoken English or written English and says, is that good? Are they being sarcastic? Or are they liking it? And so on. And basically, they took a look at what was going on inside social media, and they were getting, it was like 60,000 social interactions per minute through their fan and media engagement center. So when you looked at that, in fact, during the races a year ago, they actually had a bunch of rains and the track was soaked. And so NASCAR used some special technologies along with some data science to use these, they're called air tighteners. They dry up the ground. And the fans actually were talking more about that technology than the race once it started. So those are the kind of things you think, you know, oh, I want to predict the winner of the race. But in fact, that's not the main thing these are used for. When you think about the problems that you want solved, they're not those kind of problems. They're the mundane day-to-day. Thinking about F1 races, I think the last year's F1 race took in like 240, I think it was terabytes, 240 terabytes. Library of Congress is around 247 terabytes. That's basically per race. That's a lot of data. That's like 2,000 sure. data points a lap per car.
Sure.
And sure. they, by their 10th lap, when they first pull in for their first pit stop,
sure.
the car already has predictive maintenance running on it to find out what they should do to tune the car better.
Sure, absolutely. I was just tuning into the NASCAR channel on a very popular satellite radio company, and I was listening in, and I was like, these guys were talking about qualifying, and there's three races, and there's a series of races to get qualified for the Daytona 500, right. And it's milliseconds, Buck. It's yes. like they yeah, can yeah. be in or out of the race within a millisecond of a time, yep. and so I know they're yep. using the power of SQL Server and getting data and getting all of this, crunching all these numbers to say yep. how is the car going to perform. You know, they were talking about if you're driving down the highway and it's windy out and you get next to an 18-wheeler and your car kind of goes like this a little bit, you right. know, and it's all over the place. The wind and the breeze and the everything is there. All these elements are in control of what your car is going to do. It's the same thing if you're up on sidewall, right? And you're starting out the 500 and you're three across, right? Three deep. And it's like, do you want to be at the bottom of the track, the center of the track, and the top
yep.
of the track?
Yep.
All these things and analytics can come in to say, you know, do I draft on the top spot? Do I go down to the bottom of the track? So I'm very interested about how a driver and their team be able to get to the next level by being able to make their car more efficient based on all this analytical data
yeah.
to win a race, which
it is amazing.
As we know what comes after that, sponsorships and
yeah,
and,
exactly. It all comes back to money, right?
Yeah. Fallon, Jimmy Fallon, and you know,
yeah.
so let's talk about the same thing with like March Madness then, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
there's these whole all these ladders about who's going to win what. I mean, I would be, you know, being a professional sports bettor if I could just say, you know, I know this team's going to win the Super Bowl or this team's going to win the March Madness or this racer, you know, the driver in this race yeah. team's going to win the Daytona 500. But yeah. but someday we could get pretty close to that, right?
With all well, the check out the book, The Signal and the Noise. There are some problems with the Nate Silver guys. That's exactly what he sold to the baseball commission was, hey, here's a way you can pick out a guy and you can actually plot when he's going to be good at what he does or not, and what you need on your team. I mean, it's unbelievable. Right. So what you're talking about, and we actually do that, right? Inside Bing, if you go to the Bing page during March Madness or the Super Bowl or whatever, we're making predictions, and they're pretty good. And again, this is all based on machine learning. Now, some things can't be predicted, so we need to pull back a little bit. Thinking about these things on the prediction side, let's assume for a minute, I could care less about sports ball. I'm not a sports ball guy. However, I like stocks. I'm into money. So why don't I come up with this very cool algorithm that will predict where a stock will be and then build a portfolio of a perfect basket of stocks and never lose money? That would actually be super powerful, and I want to do that. Well, these people already exist. They're called quants, for quantitative math, up on Wall Street. And they do amazing things with predictive numbers. But everything that's predictive is based on dependent and independent variables, things that change, like let's say the older you get, usually the more weight you gain. When you're an infant, you weigh a certain amount. When you're older, so that has a high correlation. Those variables are dependent on each other. As I get older, I'll be heavier, and so on. Not perfectly, but that's kind of the idea. Well, right. The problem is, when I create this perfect basket of stocks, guess what's going to happen? Everybody's going to watch me, and they're going to buy those stocks as well.
Sure.
The problem then is that all the variables underneath that I based everything on have now changed because more people are entering into my stock.
Right.
So if there's certain things that as you chase them, you change the variables behind you, and you can no longer predict. Things like earthquakes, other things are really hard problems to solve. We're inching closer, but it may be kind of a Zeno's paradox thing of never being able to reach the wall, going half the distance all the time.
Sure.
Yeah. So
it has to do with back data too, right? Like the history of data helps formulate what that prediction may be. And so I bet Kramer wants to talk to you, by the way.
Yeah.
I figured it all out, right? So it's a discussion for us and Kramer together. But as we look down the road, I mean, I've been just kind of hearing about this the last year about all the mm-hmm. Internet of Things and all bringing all of these components together. Are you kind of saying that maybe this is a crystal ball?
So it is definitely a crystal ball for certain things. Again, age and weight, you know, you don't even have to be a statistician or a data scientist or a computer programmer to understand those things. Where these things are becoming more of a crystal ball is they're able to augment our intelligence because we can't process as much data as a computer can. Now, you mentioned something very interesting a moment ago about the base data being important. I recently wrote on the blog that you just mentioned, which is buckwitty.wordpress.com. I've got a little thing there called Backyard Data Science. And it's for people who are kind of headed this way, but are not quite sure about all the math and stuff like that yet. So I kind of guide you along in that process. But as we think about those things, I talked about recently that the base data really does matter. And the more you stand up your prediction on something, the more those variabilities, the more that changes. If you conduct a poll or a survey, there's a thing called self-selection bias. If I call around the United States and say, who are you going to vote for? I'm assuming they've got a landline, so that's a certain number of people. I'm assuming they'll be home during the day, that's a certain number of people. And I'm assuming that they have a certain level of willingness to talk to me. Those three things have sub-selected the population to where they no longer represent the United States of America. And that's why things get the polls get things wrong a lot, is because you really do have to get a very representative sample for what's called the central limit theorem to actually work.
Right, gotcha. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Buck Woody. He's a data scientist in the machine learning and data science team. What else do you want to share with the viewers here as we wrap things up?
Yeah, the thing that I think is important to me is that as technical professionals, and you call me a data scientist, and I work with a bunch of data scientists, and I'm aspiring to that, so I appreciate the compliment there. But the as data professionals, I've been in data for over 30 years now in some form or another. Don't tell the cool kids, but the NoSQL craze is really just COBOL flat files. Don't mention that, though. They need to think they've invented something. Anyway, I digress. I've been in data a long time, and I think the important thing is you have to relentlessly learn. You have to be curious about new methods of exploring data. Data is data. And so starting at the core of making sure you have good base data all the way out to the methods of analyzing it and then visualizing it. I'm simply amazed at some of the stuff that people like Jen Underwood and Patrick LeBlanc can do inside Power BI. I'm just,
sure,
it just blows me away. And so I'm learning from those folks as well. And then Cortana, you can program Cortana and talk to a computer. Years ago, you could do that and it was comical. Nowadays, it's common. And I think that for all of us, it's just an absolutely fascinating time to be alive. And whether you go into data science itself or whether you just head that way so that you have more arrows in your quiver, so to speak, I think it's an exciting time and to learn, just a great time to learn.
It is a great time to learn. You know, I've been going through a major transformation from old school, you know, and being in the industry in IT for 25 years,
right,
23 of those years with the company, and seeing all the changes to, you know, spending 80% of my time and everyday work in Azure in the public cloud, you know, as opposed to private cloud infrastructure and bare metal and managing hardware. And so we're constantly learning. You know, I always say this when I'm out on the road and talking to customers is that the day that you think you know everything is actually the beginning of the end. I mean, you can't possibly know. You're always learning, always growing, and learning new things. So I do have a suggestion for you, though.
Okay, please hit me.
Yeah, you've got Paris and Rome behind you. London's hidden by your head, actually. But they're on the same time. So, and I think that Tampa should move over to Rome's location because that's where you and I live. We need to show
a
little Tampa love.
Yeah, I'm gonna move around. The wall's going to change a bit, I think. I was going for sort of a TWA counter. These are classic posters from the 60s, posters from the 60s.
And I like it.
My house is done up. I've got a very small home here, but my house is done up to where each room is a different country, and the walls are all travel, bus tickets and bicycle things and airplane stuff and train tickets and all that kind of stuff. So you travel from one room to the other. So we're still experimenting with this back wall where I project here.
That's pretty awesome, but it's always great to have you on IT Time Tech Net Radio. We've been doing a bunch of stuff in the last couple of years, and now you're in Tampa, close by, and so we'll be doing a few more of these.
Let's definitely do that. But before we go, we need to make sure because I'm always asked. I've got a travel companion. Sometimes he goes with me. Sometimes he kind of takes off on his own. He happens to be in town, and I'm always asked to make sure that I bring out Little Buck. And so let me make sure that I give Little Buck a shout out.
Nice.
So yeah, Little Buck is out. I know that's kind of special. I know regular folk like yourself probably would not have a Little Buck of your own.
So hold on a second. So
You have something you can show as well. Oh my gosh, it's Little Blaine.
Yeah,
well, you're slightly less dressed than Little Buck, but that's okay. That's okay. I'm not judging. I'm not a judgy person.
Well, that's okay. I mean, we're gonna get together, have a couple more of these episodes, and with that, I think we're ready to wrap things up, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. So listen, let's talk some more because this stuff changes all the time. I've got a bunch of trips coming up, so check out the blog, buckwoody.wordpress.com, and just take a peek, and I would love any comments or anything you have on that blog, and be interested in what you've learned or what you want to learn about data science.
Awesome. Thanks, Buck, for being on
guys.
Time,
all right.
TechNet Radio, and with that, it's a wrap.